story kofa.
The story in kofa. I don't know. The chidor brings it down. So where did the chidor live?
Started to the tollway in northwest London.
The mid-1800s, I think.
Friday, 2nd of Nisan, 24th of March. Not as advertised. Rav Dudi Rosenberg, Shlita, insight into the Haggadah.
Right. Please forgive the absence of the speaker. I'm very much an inferior substitute, but we'll certainly do what we can. From last night at 11 o'clock, I was advised that I'm on. So let's start with Parshas Vayikra, because it is, after all, Friday. So I'll just share with you a thought of a pusik in Tehillim that we struggle over the juxtaposition of certain pesukim to understand why they are. And I believe the pusik is in Nien Aleph. There the pusik says, Zivchei Lekim, at the end of it, Riach Nishpuru, the sacrifices or the zvuchim of the Rebbein Shlulam are the broken spirit. Leiv nishbor v'nitke elekim loisivze. A lowly and humble heart, the Rebbein Shlulam will never forsake, never put to shame, never reject. Haitivu b'rtzoincho esiyon. Do good with your rutzen, with your goodwill, towards Tzion, by doing what? Tivne Chimois Yerushalayim, build and reconstruct the walls of Yerushalayim. Oz Tachpoitz, then you will find favor, you will have the desire, Zivchei Tzedek, to have again the sacrifices of righteousness. Hope I'm translating this correctly. Tzedek Oilu V'chulil, which are the different types of Kabunas. Oz Yali al Mizbechach Upurim, then there will be once again cattle on your Mizbechos. Now, what has the beginning of the Pusik with the end of the Pusik? It's something which we say and perhaps we mumbled off, but to understand, the beginning of the Pusik speaks about Zivchei Lekim Riach Tishburu, and then it speaks about about the hope that the Rebbein Shlomo will once again build the Beis HaMikdash, which we understand on face value, that essentially means that Rebbein Shlomo will once again welcome the Reich Nechoyach and the aroma of the Kabunas, and then all the Tachpoitz, then he will want Zivchei Tzedek. So let's introduce it with this week's Seder. Ayikol Moshe, then it says Udom ki yakriv mikem korban Hashem mina b'haimo. Person will sacrifice to the Rebbein Shlulam mina b'haimo, which means from the cattle. There's extensive coverage of this in the Medrash. Why the Rebbein Shlulam wanted that korbanos should be brought from b'haimos as domesticated animals, in contrast to having kabunas being brought from wild animals, from chayois. I mean, maybe the logistics of the kohanim dragging up the neck of a giraffe onto the mizbeach, perhaps is something quite challenging. And maybe, you know, catching deer and venison. Yeah, giraffe's kosher, by the way. Split feet, choose the cut, the works. And other wild animals which are kosher. But nevertheless, the Medrash says three reasons why. First one is because behemoths are available and readily accessible. They can be caught in a pen. They're there. You take them. You shecht them. Whereas the pursuit of wild animals, you'd have to go to the forests and the jungles, and to try and catch them there, which makes the prospect of bringing a korban more difficult. Reason two, because chayois have in themselves an element of arrogance, brazenness they walk with their heads up. Giraffe is a good example, actually. And there again, you've got the same thing, even with deers. They're very beautiful animals, but at the end of the day, they don't behave like cows who have got a drooped head and constantly looking towards the floor, as do goats and so do sheep. Much more domesticated, much more docile, much more humble. Which shows an akidah of anivus. And that anivus is a very, very, how do you say, amicable characteristic by the Rabbein Shlulam. He very much desires that because he really detests haughtiness and gava, arrogance. The third reason is because a Bahaima is always a nirdaf, always pursued. He doesn't really have a chance to defend himself. Even wild animals, they run, and if they're being chased, if you've ever seen a film of the lions pursuing deer or buffalo, this type of thing, agam dekusha, but at the end of the day, there's a chase that goes on before they get caught by a cow or a sheep. It's a lost case. Ain't got a fighting chance. So Memaila is like a geide fin anirdaf, and the pusik shtait elakim yevakesh es anirdaf, the Rabbein Shloilom always is on the side of the pursued. So we've got three reasons there. The first one was because wild animals are not easily available, and domesticated ones are. Second one was because the animals have got a kitta of anivus and of humility, whereas the chayas do not. And the third reason we had was because the behemah is always the pursued one, and alekim yevakesh es hanirdof. But then things change, yeah. And the Novi says in Yeshaya that when Mashiach will come in those days, he quotes a very famous pusik, which has been especially publicized in the non-Jewish circles. And there it says, "V'gol za'ivim keves," that the day will come where the wolf and the sheep will be side by side. "V'numerim gedi yirbots," there will be the leopard together with the goat, and they will be having breakfast together. And "V'arye kebuko yoichel teven," the wild cats, the lions, the cougars, and the leminayhem will be eating straw. They'll all become domesticated, which is a very, very interesting change in nature. But this is how the Novi Yeshaya is relating of what to expect the Moisa Mashiach. Now, if you take that one pusik, it immediately demolishes two out of the three reasons. Very simply. Because if we say that animals are available and wild animals are unavailable because they're in the jungle, this shows you that in the times of Mashiach, that the lion will be coming to the barn, eating straw, and he'll be very available. And so with all the other chayas, kusha chayas as well, will become into the mekoymes hayishev, and they will become almost domesticated, so therefore they'll be very, very available and to hand. So that's reason number one. The other reason which we said, because the behemah is nirdaf, and alekim yivakesh is a nirdaf, he's no longer pursued. Because if, for all intents and purposes, the lion is sitting right next to the goat and the lamb, then they're best friends, and they go off hand in hand, and they're walking down the road, best, you know, enjoying each other's company, and there's no worry from the sheep that he's going to be destroyed by this predator. One reason remains. The third reason. The third reason we said was because animals have humility. Domesticated animals are lowly, they keep their heads down, whereas wild animals have in themselves brazenness, arrogance, and a sense of self, which they walk with an upright way. Now, having analyzed that, we go back to our pusik and Tehillim, and we view it slightly differently. And we say, Zivchei Elokim, we said, is Riach Nishburu, the real essence of an everlasting, eternal reason for Zivchei Elokim, is because of the Ruach Nishburu, because they have a sense of a lowly spirit, they have humility. Leiv nishba v'nitke lekim le'sivze. The Ribbono Shel Olam is so desirous of this particular characteristic. This is something about a domesticated animal which shares the tchunas hanefesh that the Ribbono Shel Olam loves. There is a sense of humbleness, yeah, humility. And now, Haitivu birtzoncho es Tzion, Ribbono Shel Olam, please do good for Tzion. By doing what? Tivne chomos Yerushalayim, rebuild those walls. What will happen then? Oz, in the future, Tachpoitz, you will once again desire Zivchai Tzedek, those beautiful korbunas, Oilu v'chulil, because Oz, Yal, Yal, Mizbechach, Purim, only Purim, notwithstanding the fact that the other animals, the wild animals, will be available, the other animals will be accessible, and still the halucha will be that the korbunas that will be brought on the Mizbeach will be specifically min habahaimu, udom ki yakriv mikem min habahaimu. Even though l'usid luva, it will be all zyalu, when the Bishamigdash will be built, the korbunas will still be from domesticated animals. And the reason was because zivchei elekim riach nishburo. Memaila the Ribbono Shel Olam selected them specifically. Well, you have the halfway mark, and we've got something to say about the Aguda too, so let us move on to Pesach. Next week is Shabbos Aguda, we'll be saying half the Aguda, but now we'll make some observations perhaps into that half, because we won't get further.
The Chaz is going to be kosher, so why doesn't it go on?
Right. So that says the Chazimen Chazim Miyua. Okay. Right. So now we say like this. I think last time we did mention part of the Inyan of the Rusha, the Ben Harusha, and we spoke about the Hakeyas Shinov, which we wanted to understand why the Ribbono Shel Olam rejects this Rusha out of hand, and is Choyre knocking his teeth out or grinding his teeth. And then we said, teeth are a very, very interesting subject here. And you want to know why? Because animals are born with teeth. Humans are not born with teeth. And there's a reason for that too. Because the animal that comes into this world is already, what you see is what you get. And that is the end of the game. He will spend the next of his years of his life in the same position, like we said, with his head down, chewing the cud, eating grass, going to sleep, getting up in the morning, eating again, and that's the existence that goes over and over and over, which is essentially also, he's made. The moment that he's born, Shoyer, Vishtaita, the Lushan, Shoyer, Yoyim Echad is already considered a Shoyer because there's not much future. He's not actually going to get a PhD, and neither is he going to develop into a place where he's going to become a company director. This is what you can expect from him. Human beings are different. Human beings are there, that they are born in order to grow and in order to start a journey of self-perfection. That's what the Ribbono Shel Olam wants. There was one particular gentleman who was the exception to the rule. His name was Esav. He was born with teeth. And there's a very good reason for that too. The Medrash says, Esav was born hairy and he was born complete, because the word Esav connotes also, he was made, he's complete, he's reached the end of the game. Because as far as he's concerned, this world was a world for pursuit of pleasures, to enjoy himself, and therefore, as far as he was concerned, I don't have to do anything to make myself into a better person. I'm here because today we live and tomorrow we die. Eat, drink, and be merry. And this was the philosophy of Esav, which belongs to the word osu. Man is incomplete. Even when he does get his teeth, those teeth fall out. And then eventually the milk teeth are replaced by proper molars, and he aspires to growth and self-perfection. Esav was not like that. He was already osu. He was made because he hasn't got an aspiration to grow. And therefore we say, in the Rush's terminology, he says, avoidu azois lechem. Avoidu is a similar, what's this work? Why work? What's the point of coming to this world to horve, arbeiten, avoidu Hashem, anechtige tog? Cool it, guys, enjoy life, chill out. For today we live, and tomorrow we die, and we remind him, Hakei es Shinov. The teeth are very much a prominent feature in this piece of the Aguda. And we remind him that you should know that the growth of a person is symbolized in his teeth. And that's what we've come to this world for. Not because it's Avodah Zarah Lachem, but it's our work, a journey where we start as children and we move up till we go into the grave. We are on a constant pursuit of self-perfection. And therefore it explains itself also when Yosef was born, it says that the Sitnoi Shel Esav was in fact Yosef, because Esav was the complete and made man, and Yosef was the concept of Yosef Toisefes, more and more and more, which symbolizes growth. Therefore Yosef was the diametrically opposed to Esav in that Yosef. Now, I thought, I'm just wondering which ones to choose, but there is a the concept of Yitzias Mitzrayim, essentially, I'll say this quickly, is spread over four major parshas. We start off with Shmos, Va'ayru Boi B'Shalach, until Eden actually leave Mitzrayim. And there's so much about this subject matter regarding what they went through and how they suffered, and the various different phases of the Geula, it's remarkable that the Bal Haguda chooses from his source of so to speak, citing the sources for all the limidim that he learns from nowhere else except from Parshas Kisuvoy. And when you look in the Aguda, you'll notice that all the psikim are essentially based from one parsha at the beginning of Parshas Kisuvoy and analyzed literally word by word by Avid Ve'anini and all the things that says Ve'irayas Sunya Mitzrim, etc., etc., etc. What is it about this Parshas Kisuvoy that we have got four huge parshas all about Yetzias Mitzrayim, and the Bal Aguda chooses to? This is something which occurred to me, and I don't know if it's correct, but there's a famous Gemara about Umalei Rab Nachman Ledurei Avdei. The Gemara says there, yeah, he turned to his servant on the night of Pesach, and he said to him, tell me something. You're my servant. Let me ask you a question. A slave who is his master has kept him as a subservient to him for so many years. And then just like that, he says to him, okay, you're free, go. And not only that, here you are. Here is a check for £20,000. I'll give you a starting point, and I'll give you some delicious food for the journey as well. What would you turn around to say to your master at this point? And then he said to him, I would thank him, and I would be graciously, appreciative. So at this point, the Rav Nachman said to him, okay, that's it, we can close the Aguda, that's the end of it. This is the essence of the evening. You understand that you are appreciative, you are maketoif, so there's no reason for us to turn any further in the Aguda. You've explained it in one word. We were Mitzrayim, we were there for 400 years, 190 years, 210 years, however you want to explain it, we went out, the Ribbono Shel Olam took us out. Not only did he take us out and he liberated us from Mitzrayim, but he also was manic and gave us the chishkudel, millions and millions of pounds worth of jewelry, of gold, and everything else that went with it. And he took us out. What should we say to him? This is the night of Pesach. We should say thank you. Good day. That's the end of the Haguda. So you notice from this Gemara also something which is implicit, so to speak, in the whole Misig of Yetzias Mitzrayim, that the whole evening is about one thing. Recognition and appreciation of the Chasdei Hashem that he took us out of Mitzrayim. If you're going to one Seder, which actually, conveys the concept of appreciation, there's only one Seder in the Torah which is all about Hakuras HaTov, and that's the Parsha of Bikurim. Then it says there, that the person is not an ingrate, that the person recognizes that the Rebbein Shalom has been kind to him. And therefore, within that parsha, it stands to reason that the Rebbein Shalom has given us so much and been so kind to us that even the Lemidim of Yetzias Mitzrayim, which are only cryptically alluded to in that short parsha, nonetheless, this is the parsha on which the whole Haggadah at the beginning is based on. And Haloi Tuvahu! It's an amazing thing, and it works very well with that Gemara. There's also other rites to that, like Moshe Rabbeinu hitting the sand when the sand is really not going to say thank you to him. Moshe Rabbeinu not hitting the water, even though the water never spoken up and says, thanks, Moshe. It was really nice of you. You didn't hit me. I really appreciate that. No water speaks. Because Hakuras HaTov is not there in order necessarily to make the person who's the recipient happier, but it's there in order to make us better people, because that turns us into appreciative individuals. And therefore, all these things can grab. I've got a few other rites, but there's no time for it. I just want to end with something which is a beautiful tale, but it's a real one. And in our home, we were sitting around the Seder when my father, Nu'ul of Shulam, used to come to us regularly for Pesach. And when we came to the Parsha of Vayurei, Oisuni Hamitzrim Bayanunu, so he was listening as we were explaining it, how the Egyptians did bad to us and tortured us. And then he was sitting there quietly and he was observing. And then he raised his hand. So I knew he wanted to make an intervention, he wanted to say something. So he asked the children, why is it that grammatically it says Vayurei Oisuni Hamitzrim? If you speak about it by way of they doing bad to us, then the word which would be used would be Vayoreyu Lonu Hamitzim. They have done bad towards us. But you can't say Vayoreyu Suni, which really loosely translates is that they made us into bad people, which is not really grammatically correct. So he said, I'll tell you a story which might shed some light on that. Maybe this story has been heard because I've heard it, the feedback from a few other people, but the master is, I heard it directly from him. After the war, there was a man who was arrested because he was deceiving the German government on the basis of Wiedergutsmachen, which was repatriations. And they used to pay people who suffered in the war. And this man, who was in America at the time, was destitute, and instead of cashing in on one name, he found a device of how he would manage to cash in on 37 names. And Kedaka Bakoidish, the Germans are very meticulous, eventually they caught up with him. And not only did they want the money back, but they were already gunning for him. He's a deceptive man, and he's a fraudster. It didn't look very bright, and very many askuna were involved in this particular case, but in the end it came to my father-in-law, Ulav Shulam, who was asked to help out. He says, what am I supposed to say? I mean, it's cut and dried. He says, listen, Haskell, I should help. So he went in, and they made an appointment for him to see the German consul in New York, was essentially the ambassador, and her name was Dr. von Kotzibu. And she was a very intelligent lady, and when they had the appointment, to cut it short, my father-in-law walked into the room, and he sat down. She said to him, we're looking at the papers, you know, Abbasid, we have this appointment, what would you suggest? It seems to me, like you said, pretty cut and dry. The guy is a fraudster, you can see it, there's no question about it. His name appears on about 36 claims, and there's no way that you can let him off the hook. So my father asked her, do you know more about this man, except what's printed on your report? She says, not personally, no, but he says, well, I did a little research on him, and let me share the following with you. He was arrested by the Germans in the beginning and taken and rounded up in a town called Pshemeshl. And the man was deported straight to the camps. When he got to the first concentration camp, he was there. They lined him up, and it was going to be right or left. And at this point, the German asked him how old he was, and he knew that he was only 14. And then somebody kicked him from behind and said to him, "Sogen du bist 16." So he realized, you know, he was shaken up, and he said, 16 years old. So they put him to the right, and he looked able-bodied. And he says, that was lie number one. He learned, if you said the truth, you would have gone up in the chimneys. If you told something which was untruthful, then you survived. It wasn't long after they asked them, anybody who's got some sort of a profession. And so he was again kicked behind from an older gentleman and said, "Sag mir, du kennst etwas." "Sag mir, was kennst du gut nicht?" "Sag mir, du kennst kochen." So he said, "I'm a chef." "You're a chef, you know how to cook? Oh, okay, so come with us." And they took him to the kitchens. That was exception number two. He learned very quickly, if you want to survive, you lie. You want to go be shot, carry on telling the truth. And in the kitchens, he learned very quickly that this was the way to survive, and he was able to help his friends as well. So in the evening, when he took food from the kitchen, he managed to get some potato peels and things that he smuggled out and was able to help other people survive too. He learned quickly that if you don't steal and you're not a thief, then other people and you will also perish of hunger, because by the stipends that they're giving you, there's no way that you'll survive. And so he went on with proof number four and number five, and then he turned around to this woman and he said to her, "This man was in his formative years. He was a young, innocent boy. He learned very quickly the ropes of the camps. And you know, this was deception, thievery, lying, deceit, cheating, all the way. And guess who taught him this education system?" And he points a finger and he said, "You! Because your country and your people are the ones that educated him like that. And that's the way he survived. And now you're taking your education system and facing it towards him and saying, now you are culpable because you are deceitful and you are a cheat. Can that be right, Dr. von Kotzipu?" She picked her hands up and she said, "Rabbi Besser, are you a lawyer?" He says, "No, I'm purely a Talmudical student." He says, "I have nothing to answer. I will do everything within my power in order to get him off the hook, and I do accept your arguments. But I think that I would like to keep up this contact because I think that we might be able to do considerable work together in this field." At this point, my father-in-law turned and he said, "Could be that this is pshat in the Balaguda. Vayurai Yosuni Hamitzrim is not just by chance. Vayurai Lonu Hamitzrim means that they did bad to us. But that doesn't mean Vayurai Yosuni Hamitzrim means they made us into bad people. Their very persecution of us changed our character, made us into evil people, because this were the effects of the persecution, just like the effects on this man turned a regular adolescent into a thief and into a deceitful fraudster. So by Yurai Yisuni Amitzim, we remember how the Rebbein Shlem, we say to him, if we are bad in this gulas, it's because of the effects of all the surrounding factors. I wish you all like Shabbos, a Freilich Yom Tov, and apologize for
that.